Who are you?
Yeah.
Why?
Why? How the hell did that end up with an extra desk? All right, well, that's fine. Wyatt. Wyatt Dancy.
Yes, sir.
X. Dot. All right, so Wyatt showed up. Sarah showed up. Jordan Williams is not here, right? Okay. I'm going to have two Jordans. Crazy. All right. I think I'm good.
I hope so.
All right, so someone keep track of the time. I owe you 5 minutes. I kept you late because you let me go. Shame on you. All right, couple of things. One, how many people did their homework? Okay, good, good. So I heard from students that one or two of the questions were screwed up. Apparently, I had last semester's dates as opposed to this semester's. So if you got them wrong, you'll get them right. Because if I make a mistake, you will not suffer the consequences. I think I might have screwed up on when the paper topic was due. And I screwed up that one. When is the paper topic due?
January 26.
January 26. Okay, very good. Very good. And the other one I screwed up on was the final exam. When's the final exam?
The day of the last
class, but when is that? No. May 9th. Are you a senior? If you were a senior, it would be the summer. All right, yes?
Did you talk about your favorite band?
It's on my website.
Oh.
Did you look through the website? Like, I kind of hinted in my morning directions. What's my favorite band?
Rush.
Yeah. Rush, absolutely. Greatest band ever. Do you like Rush? I recommend that you listen to Red Bark Shadow. That's a good song. 2112. Epic. Just saying. All right. So we got those two. So I'm going to take those in, and I will fix them. So those of you who did it, great. Now, you know what? I forgot to mind the other class, but I'm going to remind you guys, so advantage to you. That's the way my brain works. There's also another potential extra credit opportunity, and the time is ticking on that. Gonna have to go into Engage to figure that one out. I know some of you did that as well, but I'm not gonna give spoilers, so make sure you go and check things out carefully. Somebody, and you don't have to raise your hand, somebody went over to the bookstore looking for the book. Apparently you didn't watch the video, because where are you gonna get your book from?
Online.
Where?
On your website.
On my website, and where else can you get it? Engage, and how much is it gonna cost you?
Great.
Nothing. Now, if you would rather have a physical copy of the book, you can. Go be robbed. If you want to spend the money, be my guest. But keep in mind, like I did say in the video, what I did for your book is I literally took my old edition and I ripped out the chapters that I don't cover. So in a world history book, you get world and you get Western combined. And I figured it's stupid to have the chapters in there that I'm not going to cover. So I ripped them all out, and I left you with a stack of only the chapters that are relevant to what we're covering in class. So you spend the money, you have at it. I'll never tell you not to spend money. But seeing how I don't make a penny out of it, if I was you, I would go with the free option. But again, that's up to you. Yes?
Just to clarify, the quiz was the only thing for homework, right?
You had to watch the video and take the quiz.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. You're going to have homework over this weekend. And that is topic related. So, topics for your papers, as was said, they are due 1 week from Friday. You are going to email me the topics. But like I said, on my website, I don't need it to be a thesis statement. All I want to know, broadly speaking, is there something that happened somewhere in the world from 1500 all the way, we'll say, up to World War II that is of interest to you and that you want to write about? But be warned, we have to implement a policy of realism.
Okay.
You're going to write about something that interests you, but you've got to keep in mind the paper, if we're going to focus on pages, though I'm not going to grade you on pages, at the most is going to be like 8 pages. So if you want to talk about the life of, I don't know. Say Confucius, because we're going to talk about Confucius in there. There have been books that have multiple volumes that have been written on certain figures in history. And if that's the person you want to talk about, I'm probably going to say you're not going to be able to do it. Because it would be impossible to talk about the life of a human being who changed the course of human history. Just like you couldn't write in 6 to 8 pages your life story. There's just too much. It's impossible. So, my advice to you is remember these words. Narrow the scope. Think about the length of the assignment and compare that to your ability to write about it. If you're going to talk about World War I, you're not going to be able to talk about World War I. It's too big of an event. But you could talk about a particular battle. You could talk about a particular event that occurred in the midst of the war, technological advancement. And we're going to talk about global cultures. We're going to talk about China. We're going to talk about Japan. We're going to talk about India. We're going to talk a little bit about Islam, Shintoism, Buddhism. You know, there's so much stuff we're going to cover that you can just take like a little nugget out of it. And that would be the scope of your paper. Now, when you send me your topics, literally, all you're going to say is, Professor, I'd like to write about both. If I think it's too broad in the moment, I'll reply. Okay, that's great. But again, just make sure you pick some aspect of it, try and narrow it down. Or if it's something that I think is already narrow, I'll be like, spot on. Have to send me it by email. Okay? Has to come in by email. Next Friday.
Okay.
Any other questions on the topic?
Overkill.
Alright, anyone have any questions about anything that I said on the video? In terms of like how we're going to do the class.
It says when you have perfect attendance, you get 3 points added.
Minimum.
What does that like actually mean?
That literally means I'll calculate your grade come May 12th, whenever I sit down and do your exams. Mm-hmm. And I will look at your average, and if you have perfect attendance, boom, I'll put a minimum of 3 points added right on. So it's not like the extra credit points that get added into the
sum. Yeah, that's right.
This is, you get a minimum of a third of a letter grade. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, I think I did allude in the video. I had one class last semester, this actual class, where I had one student left, last person standing. I was so proud of her, but then again, that was a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class. I gave her 10 points. So I will keep that as my rule. Minimum of 3. If there's a lot of people, it will be at least 3. If there's a few, it might be 5. But if we get to the end where there's 2 of you competing, then I'll start saying, oh, if you make it to next week, it'll be 6. 7 to encourage you to get perfect attendance. Now, do you have to get perfect attendance? What happens if you get sick? Is it the end of the world? No. You're sick? You're sick. Just like in if you have a job. If you're sick, you're sick. Nothing to worry about. Just don't miss too many.
Sorry, I'm a stickler. So if your absences are excused and you have...
That would count towards perfect attendance. So if you play sports... I know, I've already heard from baseball and softball players today already that they remind me that they're going down to Florida. So if they do not miss any other classes, that will count as perfect attendance. But how do you get an excused absence?
A note.
What type of absences gets the excused? You have to go back and look at the attendance.
A health services.
Yeah, so I want you, if you are actually legitimately sick, not going to tummy ache, but if you like have COVID or if you break a leg and you are out and you need a medical excuse, contact health services and they'll send you a note. If it's sports related, I just got to see a team list, make sure you're on the travel team, and that's all I need. You just tell me in advance. If you got to go to court, again, summons. You know, there are documentation in advance, but I do not excuse, oh, I don't feel good. If you send me an email saying you don't feel good, I'll be like, geez, thanks for coming and not infecting us. But I don't excuse that.
Because we all have degrees of illness. You know, there are sometimes people get like a little hangnail and they feel sad and they can't go to class. Not that any of you would ever do that, but I've had students that like that. Whereas there are people that come in like dead man walking that I would like throw them out of the room if it looked like they were going to puke. But again, that's up to you. Okay? Anything else?
Weather-related?
Yeah. The class, even if class is canceled, I can do videos. So I will do that. I say that because the college wants us to do now alternative assignments. So I'll just do a lecture. And I'll reward you. I'll give you extra credit if we hit with the with all the stats and stuff. I can see the analytics. And usually I say if like 90% of the class watches it all the way through, I add 5 points in. Other questions? Cool. If there's anything else, do not hesitate. I should be around most of the weekend. I probably won't be around all weekend. But if you have anything, just send me an email. You can send it to my Anna Marie account, or you can send it to that, whichever Proflomatic I left up on the website. I don't remember if I left it linked to my website or if my URL or if I went and got a Gmail account. I don't remember. But whichever way is there. All right. What time is it? All right, so we finish at 1:30, correct? So someone let me know when it's 1:25. All right,
Spain. How far did I get?
I don't remember.
I know we were talking about Columbus. I know we were talking about how Columbus screwed up.
The two mistakes.
Did I cover them both, or was that when I realized when we ran out of time?
Yeah.
So what were the two mistakes?
He thought it was 25%.
Smaller?
Yeah.
And what was the other mistake? See, I think that's where I left off. Do you know?
No, I forgot.
No, you weren't even here. Do you know?
Did he think it was India?
No. Well, he did. But when he was talking to Ferdinand and Isabella, the king and queen, talking about we're going to do this, as I said in class, he believed it would take him 30, maybe 40 days tops to get to Asia. And obviously the big one is he didn't know the continents in the way. But one, he miscalculated the size of the globe. So he thought going from Europe around the backside of the ball to get to in Asia was, again, 25% closer than it actually was. The other, I think this is where I was going, if I remember correctly, the map. He relied upon the measurements that were established by Marco Polo. You've all heard of Marco Polo, right? Not the water game. What did Marco Polo do? So if some of you heard him, but you don't know what he did. All right. When the Mongolians conquered all of Asia, they reopened the Silk Road. They encouraged an exchange of commerce in goods. So Marco Polo, his father and his uncle, were merchants. So they had been traveling the Silk Road. And then on one trip, young Marco went with his father and his uncle. And they traveled all the way to the palace of none other than Kublai Khan. Well, they ditched him. They left him there. And Marco would spend, I think it was about 10 years, in the palace of the great Khan, and he got to travel around China. And he wrote a book about it. And when he got back to Italy, he published it, and it became one of the first non-religious bestsellers. And that's the picture that people had of the world. All came from Marco Polo's book. Well, Marco Polo gave rough estimates on how far everything was. So as a result, Columbus believed that Japan, which Marco Polo described as being the farthest extent of Asia, was actually 8,000 miles closer to Europe. So he moves the position of Japan 8,000 miles closer, he shrinks the globe by 25%. Literally, a month's journey tops. So,
Now, I'm not a math professor, but when you do an equation, always check your math. Because if you're wrong, good thing there was North and South America. Good thing he discovered the New World, because if he didn't, he would have died if there were no continents there. But he got fortunate. He got fortunate. So he left approximately September 6th, 1792, and he sights land on October 12th. So a little longer than he anticipated, but he actually saw land. And because he discovered an island, it's believed that he discovered one of the islands in the Bahamas. He was absolutely convinced that was Japan, because Japan was described as an island country. Well, as he sails through what he called Chibagnu, he didn't really come across many natives, but he landed, got some wood, got some fresh water, and he continued to explore. He eventually would make his way to San Salvador, where he came in contact with a group of extremely friendly and extremely naked Tiano, and he called them Indians. Their tribe was Tiano, but he called them Indians because they were darker skinned, darker hair, just like Marco Polo described the people who were part of the subcontinent of India. Indians! I discovered India. Now, these extremely friendly, extremely naked natives engaged pleasantly with the Spanish. In many ways, both economically positive as well as, we'll say, in the extramarital sense. So yeah, he acquired yams, he acquired corn, and his men also got lots of sex. Columbus recorded he was amazed that these people never said no to anything. He also was amazed that they did not resist when he declared that he was going to take some of them back home with him to Spain as proof that he got here. So he took 8 with him. They didn't fight. They didn't resist. Oh, he also brought back the secret sauce. Syphilis. Yeah. The natives gave him the clap. But if you know anything about Columbus, he would come back 3 more times. Eventually, he would explore much of the Caribbean. And he was absolutely convinced to his dying day he found a sea route to Asia. So now that creates a problem. So we have the Pope. The Pope is the head of the Catholic Church. The Pope has to deal with these Catholic kings. And the last thing the Pope wants is that the King of Portugal and the King of Spain are going to go to war over sea routes. Because now the Portuguese, they figured out they can get around Africa. They have a route. You got Spain going the other route. What happens if they come in contact with each other on the other side of the globe? And they start fighting competition. Who's going to get contracts? Who's going to get goods? Well, he didn't want a war to erupt. So, the Pope, Alexander VI, has a meeting with both John II of Portugal and Ferdinand and Isabella, and they sign a treaty. The Treaty of Tordesillas. Any of you ever heard of the Treaty of Tordesillas? I love this, because this shows the gall of the Catholic, the European Catholic perspective. All right, this is what it did. So the Pope takes a globe and he literally draws a line around it. And he says, roughly speaking, at the 39th degree, 53rd west latitude, imagine a line going all the way around the earth, that everything on the eastern side belongs to Portugal. Because this is... What do I do? No, go back. Because everything on this side, Portugal claimed. Because this is the way they were going. So that meant they would get half of Asia. Because again, they weren't quite exactly sure of the geography over there. They were using the old map. So pretty much plan on Portugal getting India. But China and Japan, that was going to go to Spain. Because Spain now could go westerly. We don't know this is here, so again, the Earth is smaller, so we end up going this way, and boom, we're on this side. So long as the Spanish stay on this side of the line, and the Portuguese stay on that side of the line, everything that they can take is theirs, because God wills it. Well, the Pope said, go, and guess what these people did? They went. But how they went about it was very, very different. And the difference is, go to the nature of the explorations. We're going to talk about Portugal later. We might not get to it today. We might have to deal with that on Tuesday. But just as a spoiler, because the Portuguese came in contact with those powerful African chieftains, their focus was business. We're going to do business with the people we come in contact with. We're not going to try to conquer them. Spanish, on the other hand, they focused on conquest. Any of you ever heard of the Reconquista? I think I mentioned it last class. Did you?
I've heard about it.
Was it only because I mentioned it?
No.
All right. Do you know what it was?
Not really. I can't really remember what it was.
All right. Well, at least you heard of it. Anybody? Reconquista?
All right. In and around 1000 AD, much of the Iberian Peninsula, place where Spain and Portugal is today, was actually controlled by the Muslims. The Umayyad dynasty spread from the Middle East all across North Africa, crossed the Straits of Gibraltar, and took a huge foothold into Europe. Almost all of modern Spain and Portugal was held by the Muslims. But in and around 1000 AD, the Spanish began to fight back. Well, we can't call them Spanish. Technically, they were just Catholics. They began to reconquer the peninsula from the Muslims. That was a 400-year process. But during the reign of Ferdinand and Isabella, they conquered the last holdout and achieved the Reconquest, the Reconquista. They were busy fighting wars, driving out the infidels, and spreading the faith. Well, that was the mindset that they had because they had just finished. So why don't we do it in another part of the world?
Why don't we bring forth the cross and the sword? We'll beat anyone who stands in our way into submission, and then we'll bring them to God. So that's the reason why the Spanish explorers are known as the conquistadors. They were going to conquer as well as explore.
The starting point
was a first colony founded in the New World by the Europeans. In 1493, on Columbus's second expedition, he founded the colony of Hispaniola in what today we call Haiti. It would be the first permanent colony. But this would be the launching pad. From here, the Spanish began spreading out and conquering all the major islands. They conquered Cuba, They conquered Santiago, they conquered Puerto Rico, they eventually would make their way up into Florida. They just conquered everywhere they went. Don't worry about that. Yeah. Once they got to Cuba, they used that as a launching pad to land into the Yucatan Peninsula. And when they arrived, they heard stories of a wealthy, powerful kingdom that had streets paved with gold. But the weird thing is, as the Spanish are going, they're coming in contact with more tribes, and none of what they're seeing matches the description of how Marco Polo described China, or Japan, or India. So many of them start sitting back saying, yeah, something's off. Something's weird. Well, in around the same time they begin plunging into modern Central America, another Spanish explorer takes to the sea. Ferdinand Magellan, who ironically himself was Portuguese, but he ended up sailing for the Spanish flag. He would essentially discover, factually, that Columbus was wrong when he set sail, determined to get around all of these islands, to try to get around the other side. So in 1520, he set sail. November 28th, nothing you need to remember, 1520, he sails around Cape Horn, realizes it's possible to get around this landmass, sails up the coast for a little bit, and then decides, well, we've got around it, now let's see if this is in fact Asia. Let's go see if we can find Africa. But they continued and continued and continued and continued. Somewhere, believed to be in the Philippines, they landed on an island, somewhere out here, and they came across a tribe, the Lapu-Lapu. And they tried speaking with their chief, Tatu Lapu-Lapu. Everything seemed to be going okay until Magellan declared that the chief should become a Catholic and he should baptize all his people, which apparently offended the chief tremendously. And the chief basically declared, we're going to kill you all. Magellan and his group quickly rushed back to the shore. They get on their longboats. They begin rowing out to their sailboats. But unfortunately, the captain who stood at the beach to kind of hold off the Indian assault to allow his men to get on board got penetrated with several spears and arrows and fell over dead. One of his crewmen, in his memoir, reported the last sight of their captain they had was the natives descending upon him and hacking his bodies to bits. Because apparently, the Lapu-Lapu liked white meat. They're cannibals. But when the survivors returned, 18 of them, on one of the five ships got back to Spain, they reported, Columbus screwed up big time. Earth way bigger, and that's definitely not Asia. So the Spanish suddenly realized what they had. They didn't have an access point to Asia. They had a whole continent that they could take for themselves. Mercantilism, baby. Why are you going to take the land? What are you going to get more out of it? Resources. You're going to get resources. And what are you going to do with those resources? Make money. You're going to make money. And then what are you going to do with that more money? Buy more soldiers, and then what are you going to do? Take more land. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
All right, questions?
Yeah.
The captain that died was that dude.
Yeah, that's a portrait of Ferdinand Magellan. Fortunately, he did not make it home. He was an appetizer. Which I suppose if you're going to go, you would know. Although I would hope to give him indigestion.
Other questions? Oh, look at this. Look at. Hold on. I'm going to show you off. Check this out. You printed out the outlines at the bottom of the class. Oh, boy. Love it.
All right.
So, yes. They sailed across, they filled up fresh water supplies, and they sailed across the island. I mean, the Pacific Ocean. And of course, we know there are small islands that are in the Pacific. So whenever they came close to an island, they would land and try to get fresh water.
So if you to give a direction out, is it round or like?
Yeah, they went around. But again, I know I took the world and made it flat. So basically, they went around the bottom half. They went around the bottom. They came up into Asia. And then they ended up going south again because you take a ball, imagine a basketball, and you hold it straight. The shortest distance is kind of towards the top, right? So they went southerly to narrow the circumference to get to where they had to go quicker. Plus also, what would happen if they went north too far? Well, they would be violating the Treaty of Tordesillas. They tried avoiding contact with the Portuguese. Because that would be an act of war. An invasion of territory. Other questions? It's a good question. I don't think I've ever gotten that one before. Well done. All right. Now, while the Spanish were dealing primarily with small tribes on the islands, the first significant state that they came in contact with, dare I say empire, was the empire controlled by people that we refer to as the Aztecs. Now, here's the problem with this period of time. Most of what we know about these people comes from the Spaniards. Because they did not speak Spanish at the time, nor did they speak English. And, interestingly enough, they didn't leave any books. So we know very little about their pre-contact years. Second, here's one of the dangers of relying upon history. How many of you like anchovies? How many of you even know what anchovies are? What's anchovies?
It's a fish.
It's a fish. Right? Like in a little can? Yeah. Smothered in delicious oil? Ever have one? Do you ever have one on a pizza?
I've made it, but I haven't had it.
Never had anchovies before?
No.
Oh, anchovies are wicked good. Super salty, though. Wicked good. Wicked good. A tiny little fish you can eat. You don't even have to worry about the bones. It has a nice little crunch to it. All right, nobody likes anchovies. Well, good. So you know what that means? I, being the only one who likes anchovies, will officially declare that anchovies are the best food ever created, and that will be the rule in my class. You don't have to eat them, but you all have to agree with me that anchovies are the best because I said so. Well, here's the thing. If we rely upon the sources back in the day, the only perspective that we're going to get is one voice. The voice of the conquistador, the Spanish Christian warrior
who is going to conquer for God and country. So, our depictions of these periods, of these peoples, are very skewed. They're very warped. They're very biased.
But keep in mind, like anchovies, everybody has their own biases. I can guarantee you there are things that you like that I don't. Does that make you right? Does that make you wrong? No, that's just your opinion. But if you only rely upon one opinion, you never get the true picture. But we can't, because the other half of the picture is lost. So just keep that in mind. All right. So one of the first big details we know was that it was the Spanish who called them Aztec, not themselves. They actually referred to themselves as Mexica. That was their name for themselves. And of course, Mexica is the basis for Mexico. When the Spanish arrived, they were not a primitive society. No, no, no. They had a vast empire. I asked you last class, I'm going to ask you again. What's the difference between a kingdom and an empire? Anyone remember? Okay, a kingdom is a subset of an empire. That's true. But what's the difference? One is lesser than a part of. But what's the big distinction between an empire and a kingdom?
Culture.
We did. We talked about it in terms of culture. I think you mentioned culture. What's the difference? Who's in charge of a kingdom? Okay, and the king is a representative of? No. King is a representative of the people he rules over. And who are the people he rules over? Bring back that cultural thing. The king rules over the people of his own culture. So the king of Spain rules over the Spaniards. Okay? What's the difference between a king and an emperor? If a kingdom is a subset of an empire, what makes an emperor different than a king? Or an empire different than a kingdom?
He has power over people who aren't of his culture.
That's all it is. An empire is a system where one ruler controls other cultures, other people, or, to use Ernest's phrase, other kingdoms. The Aztec had, over the preceding century, that's it, only about 100 years before, conquered all of the other tribes in modern southern Mexico and controlled them, built an imperial system, just like the Spaniards were trying to do. Oh, Tenochtitlan. There we go. I'll give you the spelling and then we'll go back to the map. The heart of the empire was their capital, the city of Tenochtitlan. When the Spanish arrived, this was the largest, most populated city in all of the Americas. It had about 300,000 residents living in it. By comparison, in 1500, London had about 150,000. So this was huge. Got the spelling? So I'm going to go back to the map. The other interesting thing was that it literally was built in the middle of a lake. The Aztec selected this site in Lake Texcoco, because in the middle there were small islands, and they expanded it to make like a floating city. Why would you build a city in the middle of the lake?
because it shows off power.
Look at what we can do. We literally can live on water. That's true. And all throughout Tenochtitlan, there were massive temples and structures, all dedicated to the Aztec gods. It's another advantage of living in the middle of a lake.
Isn't it harder to access?
Oh. Yeah.
So there were causeways to the land that could be severed. So once they're severed, the only way to get there is to come by boat. Any of you ever row a boat before? A canoe or anything like that? Can you go really fast? No. So in order for you to be attacked, the bad guy has to get in a boat and row all the way out. You're going to see him coming.
This was meant to be twofold. Look at what we can do, and you can't stop us. You can't attack us. It's all based on a military mindset. But of course, you can't grow crops. You can't raise herd animals in the middle of the lake. So this empire was focused on economic domination. Their power, their wealth, was based upon controlling the commerce of the whole part of South Central America. They dominated it all. And the tribes that didn't trade with them were forced under threat of destruction to give tribute, make offerings, rather than risking complete destruction. Now, how did they come into being? Well, here's the other amazing thing that sometimes students actually find this just fascinating. When the Spanish arrived in the Yucatan Peninsula in 1519, they had only been living in the region for 200 years. They migrated into that part of the world from somewhere north of where they set up their shop. It's possible that they came from California. We don't know. Could have come from the central part of America. We don't know. But at some point they migrated down, set up shop, and would eventually take control. Now, why did they go there? Well, their god told them to.
Huitzilopochtli. Don't have to spell his name for the test. His name, if I put it on there, will be on there. He is their primary god. He is the sun god. And according to Mexican legend, that their god told them to go to the valley to set up in this sacred place and to grow and become fruitful. Give or take, 1325. That's the estimated year of their arrival.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if this has some sort of relation with the movie Apocalypto or something like that.
Ah, yeah, kind of. Because Mel Gibson's, I think you're right, I think it's Apocalypto. That goes to show you the type of culture that the Aztecs actually had. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
What you're saying is basic. Some of the things that you're talking about is some of the things in the movie.
Yeah.
The tall structures and the had a sun god, just like how the picture is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the priest, they had these sort of things.
Magnificent headdresses. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Mel Gibson made a movie, did his best to try to draw from the few primary sources that were available that survived from their perspective and try telling a story. But it was definitely brutal. You should watch it. It's a good flick. Definitely recommend it.
All right. So the god told them to go to the valley. They arrive. But here's another interesting thing.
When they arrive at the spot where their sun god told them to go, there already was another empire in place. Another tribe. The Azcaz Polatsko, they were the most powerful state. They had the largest army. They had control over commerce. So apparently, the descendants of the Aztecs kind of bribed their way in and promised to obey the control of the Azcapotzalco. In particular, they would pay tribute in the form of military service, because the Aztecs were effective warriors. All right. Now, 1325 all the way up until 1428. Now we're less than 100 years before the Spanish arrive in Mexico. The Aztec played the role of servant. But in 1428, under their ruler, Itzcoatl, he launches a revolution. He forms an alliance with some of the other tribes in the valley, and they turn against their emperors, overthrow them, destroy them, and slowly roll over the valley and take possession of the former lands of the Azcapotzalco. Questions?
Who was Itzcoatl?
He was their fourth ruler. He was their revolutionary.
The Aztec?
The Aztec revolutionary, yeah. He was the one that basically founded the Aztec Empire. Oh, wait, hold on. Aztec dominate. Okay, we got that. All right, so they take control. All right, we have that. All right, so I'll go back. I know I went quick. Go back. We got that. So
it leads to the revolution. They topple the former empire, and they take control.
You good? Obviously, I can click. I know I can click faster than some of you can write. Okay. Well,
what do revolutionary leaders do when they make their own empire? They start making all the rules.
And what Itzcoatl would establish essentially would become the foundation of an imperial ideology, an imperial mindset. He set the rules that would allow one tribe to control all of the others. Rule number one. He ordered his warriors to burn all of the books, all of the scrolls, all of the writings of all of the other tribes in the valley. Why would a conqueror want to destroy the history of the people they conquered?
Because they had no knowledge.
Exactly. Because what's going to happen to the next generation?
They're going to be brainwashed, basically.
Yeah, they're not going to know any different.
They can only identify with the culture, or like the people that they have around them. And if there's no history of what came beforehand, they can only identify what's within front of them.
So it's always been that way. That's the reason why there's a lot of political movement in our country today to engage in what's called revisionism. They're really trying to rewrite history, because you guys don't know history. So if they change the way history is presented, you don't know what the actual facts were.
History has always been used as a political weapon, going all the way back to the ancient Assyrians.
So the fact that the Aztecs did it was no different. If they don't know the past, all there is Aztecs were in control. And if that's the way it's always been, are you going to resist? Nope. Second, he imposed the Aztec gods upon them. And he imposed the ritual structure upon them. But here's the interesting thing. Under the Aztec religion, only the priests of the Aztecs could communicate with the gods. So, what would you have to do to keep the gods happy? You would have to make sacrifices.
You give things to the priests, and the priests will make offerings, and the gods will be pleased.
Not like if you are a Christian or a Muslim or even a Buddhist where you can pray for yourself. Everything is done through the Aztec priests.
So what does that mean? Well, if the priest says you have to give, you're going to give because you're going to displease the gods.
The final element, the Aztecs presented themselves as being the master race. They told the people they conquered that the gods wanted them to rule over them. They have always been there. They are God's chosen people. So, you must obey. And resistance was futile.
Well, after Izcoatl, his son, grandson, great-grandson, etc., continued to conquer and continued to conquer to the point where they conquered almost all of the southern part of Mexico.
And
the states, this is their state, that they did not conquer, like the Teotihuacan, they would make treaties with, alliances. But notice, I use this reference in particular. Notice, there's blots, particularly the blot for the Tlaxcala here, that are not in the empire.
Had the Spanish come a decade later, the Aztecs might have conquered the whole region. But they hadn't conquered everybody.
And the Tlaxcala was a powerful tribe that resisted the Aztecs.
Very important, because ultimately when the Spanish arrive, they would make an alliance with the enemy. Because the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
All right. Now, how did the empire operate? Well, it was based on a system of extraction. Political scientists refer to the Aztec Empire as being an extractive empire. Meaning, the government took from the people what it needed. It extracted it in the form of tribute. What's tribute?
An offering.
So the people who were the subjects gave offerings to the Aztecs so the Aztecs wouldn't kill them or destroy them or burn their homes.
Now, one of the weird things, or rather the interesting things, was the Aztecs did not force the people to change their economic existence.
So if you were if your family farmed corn and had done so for generations, when the Aztec came in, they didn't tell you to produce something else. You could continue to produce whatever you wanted to. But you had to give a cut to the Aztecs. Of course, we'd call that taxes. But similarly.
So they didn't try changing the economies. They just took from the economies. So crafts, gold, jewels, textile, foodstuffs, whatever the different villages were producing, that was what was taken. But they also took a very precious commodity. And you probably saw this in Mel Gibson's movie.
The most significant commodity that they extracted was human beings. Because according to the Aztec religion, the Aztec people are the chosen people. But the people who were not Aztec could help satiate the appetite of the gods. So, not daily, but definitely weekly, human beings would be taken
from amongst the conquered peoples, brought to Tenochtitlan, brought up on top of the sun god's temple, held down, and the priest would stand over them with a knife, cut a hole in their chest, rip inside, and pull out the still beating heart, and hold it up to the sun. And as the blood flowed out of the body and the heart on stained the temple, the sun dried the blood, which was a manifestation of the god drinking it, taking the essence. Because in the Aztec religion, the sun god is constantly at war with the moon god. Every single day, there is a battle that plays out in the heavens. The sun god emerges victorious from the night, holds his power until he exhausts himself, and then must rest. And as he rests, the moon god comes out of the darkness and takes control of the heavens. But the only way to assure that the sun god will be re-energized is through that sacrificing. Thus, once refreshed, the sun god would emerge again the following day and smite the moon god. Day after day after day. So, the only way to keep the good times rolling, to make sure that the sun rose, was through human sacrifice. Sometimes dozens. In some festivals, they killed thousands. Once the corpse was dead, they then took the body and threw it down the stairs and let the corpse fall down to the people. And you know what the people down below, the Aztec, would do with the corpse? Goes good with a nice bottle of Chianti. Because what's good for the gods is good for the gods' chosen people, no? Now, by the way, there was no limitation on who got sacrificed. Men got sacrificed, women got sacrificed. You know that favorite thing to do? And you could kill two birds with one stone. You take parents and their kiddos and bring them up on top of the temple and have the kids watch as their parents' heart is carved out of their chest. Because, of course, the kids would be horrified and they would cry. But you know who like the salty tears of children? Their rain god. So you kill two birds with one stone. You keep the sun god charged up and you keep the rain god happy. Because if the rain god gets angry, any of you ever been down to Central America during rainy season? We'll just say it gets quite moist. So if the rain god doesn't get enough tears, you get nasty typhoons and storms and tropical storms. But here's a rhetorical question. I'm looking at the time. 8 minutes left. Why do this? Why would you do this? Let's think politically.
Reduce population?
Reduce whose population? You're right, but you've got to figure out whose population is being reduced.
Non-Aztecs.
The non-Aztecs.
That's my thought.
Yeah, the conquered people. And why do you want to reduce their population?
Keep Aztecs strong.
Exactly, because you're using it as a form of terror, but you're also reducing their population, which means they'll never be able to outnumber you and rise up and rebel.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant move.
Now, unfortunately, we don't know exactly why they did it, but they did it very effectively. All right.
In terms of their society, it was hierarchical. So the guys at the top had all the power, the guys down below did not.
It was authoritarian. So the rulers had absolute authority. And it was all based on militarism. Effectively, there were no police, but the Aztec main control with their army. Fierce warriors.
Moralistically speaking,
this is something that fascinates me, this point right here. They were very austere. Does anyone know what that word means, austere? Means they were disciplined. They were obedient. They were respectful. They did things in moderation, so they didn't brag. They were humble. Basically, everyone had a place in society. You didn't look to be better than you were. There was no individualism. Rather, you were part of the collective. Laws were harsh. Punishments, harsh. But one of the things that fascinates me the most was that, unlike when you think of most, you know, monarchies and you know, like the way Europe was, where like the noble had all the perks, in Aztec society, the nobles had all the perks, but the laws were harsher on the nobles. If they behaved incorrectly, that could result in a death sentence. Whereas a commoner might get a slap on the wrist. So, for example, if a commoner got drunk and acted like a drunken fool, the soldiers might beat him up a little bit, rough him up, take him home, and do one of these: don't do this again. But if you engaged in that behavior and you were a noble, parents literally had the right to execute their children. So if you humiliated the family, if you did not act like you indeed were part of the master race, your dad would kill you without second thought. So the rules were harsher, the punishment was harsher, the higher up the ladder you were.
So does that, you mean like compared to other tribes and Aztec?
Pretty much anywhere else on Earth. Usually the nobles can get away and do whatever they want.
When you say nobles, though, you don't mean like Aztecs. You mean like...
I meant like
the Aztecs.
No, what I'm saying is that nobles everywhere else on Earth. European nobles, Chinese nobles. Hell, Jeffrey Epstein. And his little pedo island. And all of the rich people who have gone to that island. And yet notice how the whole list of the people that went still has not been released. Even though there's rumors that Bill Clinton was there and Bill Gates and other powerful people. Well, the powerful people in America can do whatever they want. Heck, there's even rumors like Hillary Clinton was involved in killing people. You know, we don't know. It's not investigated. Hunter Biden, you know, with his drugs and his laptop and his gun crimes and all the rest. It's never investigated in our country. The rich can do whatever they want. But what would happen to you if you were walking down the street and you had some cocaine fall out of your pocket and you had an illegal gun? The cops would descend upon you, beat you, throw you in jail. You'd be gone. But in Aztec society, it was the opposite. The well-to-do had the harshest rules, the harshest penalties. Whereas the common people are just like, you're just so dumb. No worries, but just don't be dumb. I think that's interesting. It's a very different culture. But what are the perks? Well, this is a painting. Wait, 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left. Painting of an Aztec noble. They got to wear bling. They got to advertise the fact that they were noble. So they got to wear fancy clothes. They got to show off. They had ornamental jewelry. They had fancy hairstyles. They were allowed to be the rulers. They governed. They were in the government. They were priests. They were bureaucrats. Whereas the Aztec commoners, they were workers. Most engaged in construction or agriculture or hunting or fishing, food production. But here's an interesting fact, and I'll have this one be the last one because we're not going over today. There was mandatory military service for males. All Aztec males were required to be educated. Women were educated as well, by the way. So girls and boys went to school, and both received physical training. But the men were groomed to be warriors. Every Aztec male was expected to serve. Because if you served your state, you could rise in position. All right, almost done with the Aztecs, but I'm not going over. I absolutely refuse. So, last minute questions. All right, so let's throw it out there. What's your homework? Start seeing if you can figure out what your topic is. How are you going to communicate your topic?
By email.
By email. Do you have to send me a thesis statement? No, not at all. What is going to be the focus of your topic? What time period?
1500 to 2.
Can you do a European topic? No, we're talking about global stuff. So you can look at places like India, China, Japan, the Middle East, Africa. I want you to see if you can learn some stuff. All right? Be safe. Stay warm. It's going to be cold. And look out for the snowpocalypse tomorrow. We're getting like another inch.